ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय पुरीं विहाय भगतः उपरुधो भुजङ्गमः यदा तम इवानुपुरी विशीर्ण प्रकृति गता The serpent who had already been arrested by the soldiers of Yavanaraj and who was out of the city began to follow his master along with the others. As soon as they all left the city, it was immediately dismantled and smashed to dust. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When the living entity is arrested, all his followers, namely the life air, the senses and sense objects, immediately leave the lump of matter, the body. When the living entity and his companions leave, the body no longer works, but turns into basic material elements. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. When a city attacked by enemies is vacated by its inhabitants, the enemy immediately takes advantage of that city and bombards it to smash the whole thing to dust. When we say, "Dust thou art, and unto dust thou shall return," we refer to the body. When a city is attacked and bombarded by enemies, the citizens generally leave and the city ceases to exist. It is a foolish person who engages in improving the condition of a city without caring for the citizens or inhabitants. Similarly, a living entity who is not properly enlightened in spiritual knowledge simply takes care of the external body, not knowing that the spirit soul is the principal factor within the body. When one is advanced in spiritual knowledge, the spirit soul is saved from eternal transmigration. The Bhagavatam considers those who are too attached to their bodies to be like cows and asses. Sa eva gokaraha. The cow is a very innocent animal, and the ass is a beast of burden. One who labors under the bodily conception simply works like an ass and does not know his real interest. It is therefore said, Yasyatma buddhi kunapetra taduke swadhi kalatra dishubhoma ijjadi yathirta buddhi salilena karhichij chaneshwa bigyeshu sa eva gokaraha. A human being who identifies this body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of birth as worshipable, and who goes to the place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath rather than meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like an ass or a cow. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 84, Text 13. human civilization devoid of Krishna consciousness is simply a civilization of lower animals. Sometimes such a civilization may study the dead body and consider the brain or the heart. However, no part of the body is important unless the spirit soul is present. In a modern civilization of cows and asses, scientists try to search out some value in the brain or heart of a dead man. The serpent, who had already been arrested by the soldiers of Yavanaraj and was out of the city, began to follow his master along with others. As soon as they all left the city, it was immediately dismantled and smashed to dust. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 28, Text Number 24. King Puranjan was a great leader politically, socially. He was, by material evaluation, a man of great power, prestige, success. Today, practically nowhere in the world, only a few places, Bhutan, Thailand, Nepal, that there is monarchy, king. And even in such places, their powers and influence has been very limited by their own citizens. But in the days where kings were kings, they had complete power, complete control over their kingdom. Whatever they said was the last word. And there was no question of the citizens deciding whether they wanted them or not. The king was the king until death, or until retirement, when he would give his son the throne. Who would give his son the throne like that? So it was very certain. Today in the world where there is elections, assassinations, a person who is a political leader really does not know whether he'll be from one year to the next and where he may be cast in the future. Stability and security is, in human nature, a very important part of peace of mind. People worry about their future, especially people with families. If you don't have a family, there's not that much to worry about. Somehow you make it. See, these brahmacharis, they really don't worry about their future. They know they'll get a chapati somehow or other, and there'll be some floor place to sleep on. So it's very simple. But when you have wife, husband, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and so forth, there's a lot to be concerned about for the future. Factually, as soon as one is married, they have to start thinking about their children and their education of their children, the marriage of their children, and then grandchildren, and so many concerns. And why people are in a lot of anxiety today, because the future is so uncertain. So many things could happen. They could lose their job. The economy can go down. If they have their money in stocks, they don't know what the stock market will do the next day. They don't know what their health, well, whether they'll be able to actually maintain in the long run, you know, the responsibilities of so many people depending on us. So the uncertainty of future causes a lot of anxiety. And perhaps this is why in politics today there's a lot of corruption. People take bribes and so forth because they really don't know what their future is going to be. They have to stock up like little squirrels. They have to stock up with as much for the future as possible. Do you know squirrels? Squirrels, they take these little nuts called acorns or whatever, and they just, all summer they just stock up, stock up, stock up. So in the winter they have enough food. Yes? So humans are like squirrels in that way. They just stock up with as much as possible today because they do not know what tomorrow will bring. They may be kicked out of office. They may be voted out. Politics is always changing. So this uncertainty creates tremendous mental anguish. However, King Puranjan, he didn't have any such mental anguish because he was the king. There was no elections. Whatever he said was the law. Now, if you have a good king, that is the best government. If you have a bad king, it's the worst government. When Parikshit Maharaj, Yudhisthira Maharaj, when they were kings, or Prithu Maharaj, or Dhruva Maharaj, or Prahlad Maharaj, or Ambarish Maharaj, or Ranti Dev Maharaj, when these great souls were kings, the whole world was Krishna conscious. The whole world was satisfied. There was no one in need of anything because such kings were impartial. You know the story of Maharaj Sibi. He was such a king that he took it as his responsibility to take care of every single citizen without discrimination of one's caste or one's race or one's sex or even one's species. Such a king. The Vedas say that a king is meant to see every single citizen of every species of life in his kingdom as the praja, which means as his own children. He must love, care, and protect every single citizen just as a father would personally protect his own children. Therefore, when that little pigeon came and said, King, save me. How many people consider pigeon? But he considered. I'm sitting on this throne, therefore it is my God-given duty to give my life to protect even the pigeon. What to speak of a man or a woman? This hawk wants to eat me. So Maharaj Sibi said, there is no danger. With my strong arms, even if it takes all my military, I will protect you from this hawk. So when the hawk heard of this, he said, I am also your citizen. I am also your child. And my natural food is to eat pigeons. So what about me? You have to protect me by giving me the food. I'm not a vegetarian. And animals don't have to be vegetarians. Humans are supposed to be. But some animals, there's no karma for them to eat meat because that is their nature. So yes, the king. Whatever the weight of this pigeon is, you can take that much weight out of the flesh of my own body. Now, he didn't have to do that. But this was the extent. He felt responsibility. A good father would do that for his son. A good mother would do that for his son or daughter. That is why the king was willing to make such sacrifice. So they put the pigeon on scale and he cut off. But the pigeon was more. Cut off more, more, more. It's a very horrible situation. I don't think you see too many movies about this. Just kept cutting off more flesh until finally he realized there's something strange happening here. So the king sat on the scale, and it was perfect equal weight with the pigeon. So he said to the hawk, "Eat me." Now, actually, by Vedic standards, unless you're willing to do that for even your most insignificant citizen, you are not entitled to sit on the throne. You have no qualification. Now, how many people with that job description, how many people would want to sit on the throne? Very few. Therefore, there weren't people trying to assassinate the kings in those days because nobody wanted that job. You have to give your life for anyone and anything at any time. Everyone has to be your child. And a king who was willing to do that, all the citizens loved him. They loved him like their own child. There are so many examples like this. Ranti Dev. Ranti Dev was willing to give up his life just by giving the water that he depended on for his survival to a chandala. He gave all his food to a Brahmin, then to a Shudra, then to a pack of dogs, and all was left to sustain his life was a little water, and he was on the verge of death, and he gave that water to a chandala who was thirsty. Now, you may think this is fanaticism. No, it's not fanaticism. It's responsibility. Selfless. The actual quality of a person's consciousness, a quality of a person's life, is not what it is, what it appears to be in this age of Kali. It's not one's physical beauty, the shape of one's body, the characteristics of one's facial features. That has nothing to do with one's greatness. It's not by how much wealth one accumulates, how much property one has. It's not by how much intelligence one acquires, how many degrees he has. It's not by one's skills in singing or dancing or acting or athletics or engineering or any of these other skills. It's not by one's fame and prestige. Actual greatness is understood by one's willingness to make sacrifices to selflessly serve others. And the extent of one's greatness is how much we expand that principle to selflessly serve your wife, to selflessly, or your husband, to selflessly serve your children, to selflessly serve your relatives, your parents, to selflessly serve your the people of your community, to selflessly serve your countrymen, to selflessly serve humanity, to selflessly serve all living entities, and ultimately to selflessly serve God. To actually selflessly serve God means to be the selfless servant of every living being. to the degree that selfless service principle expands to more and more and more, that is how great a person is. Not how much we can accumulate for ourselves or ours. So Maharaj Ranti, he was such a king. He was willing to die. And he prayed to the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he was about to give the water of his life to this Chandala. With folded palms, he prayed, "My dear Supreme Personality of Godhead, thank you for giving me this chance. The only benediction I pray for, that in every future life I may take, I'm given the honor of giving up my life in the service of others, of sacrificing my life to make others happy. That's the only benediction I ask for. Give me that strength." For in giving this chandala, this water, which means my life, I will never again have to suffer hunger, thirst, moroseness, lamentation, or any of the miseries of material existence. Now this was the king of the world speaking like this. Of course, it was all a trick of the demigods to test him. And ultimately, according to Bhagavatam, the entire world was God conscious. Why? Yadyaracharati sreshtas tatat evidarojana sayat pramanam kurute lokastaranuvartate. The whole world was God conscious because the king was God conscious. And because everyone loved him so much because they felt loved by him. People talk about love and they sing about love. But actual love is something very deep and very real. Love means sacrifice. The Braja Gopis were willing to go to hell forever to relieve Krishna of his headache by putting the dust of their feet on his head. That is love of the highest, purest state. To the degree we're selfless in our service attitude, to that degree our love is actually real. To the degree there's selfish motivations, to that degree it is not really love. There may be an emotional sentiment of love, but it is not really of the heart. Because in true love, it's not even a sacrifice, it's not even a tapasya. Like Ranti Dev, like the gopis, there's simply a spontaneous will to do anything and everything for the happiness and the well-being of the object of our love. So that was king. Therefore, Ranti Dev, because he loved his citizens as his own children and was willing to do anything for them, as a father or mother would do for a child, therefore all the citizens reciprocated. They felt so much cared for. They saw his sacrifice that they were like that with each other. They had the same love for each other, seeing his love for them. They had the same love for God as he had for God. Because they were inspired. Therefore, the whole world was Krishna conscious. Quite incredible. North, south, east, and west. Everyone was happily serving one another in the service of God. So that is the actual responsibility of leader. Therefore, Bhagavatam says we should not take the position where people are depending on us unless we can show such an example of selfless, loving service. Unless we can very much assure that we will strive, that our dependents will never take birth in this material world again, we're not really fit for the position. So this is the power of these kings. Because they were secure in their position, the entire kingdom was secure in their positions. They all knew the king will take care of me. And therefore they wanted him. The citizens of the kingdom would offer prayers and mantras every day, not just from because of some state law, but from their heart they would pray, "Long live the king." You have heard this. In England, everyone would sing, "Long live the king," in the schools, because that was the state law. But I don't know how many people really were crying out from the core of their heart. But yes, when there were kings who were great Rajarishis, citizens would pray to God, "Let the king live long." So, King Buranjan, of course, when there were bad kings, just the opposite. Hiranyakashipu, no one was secure. No one was happy. When there's a dictator who is ruthless, selfish, then even his own ministers, his own family members, nobody knows whether they'll live to the next day, what to speak of the common citizens. Because power can corrupt people terribly. A real leader is to be judged by his or her humility, compassion, and selfless service attitude, which cannot really exist without very deep devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Puranjan was a pious king to some extent, and he had a very high stable position. But even he is in the process in this verse of being totally plundered. Just like we are living in a universe, and in one sense, every planet is like a little universe within a universe. And every country is like a little universe within the universe of a universe. And every city is like a universe within the universe of a universe. And every body is like a universe within a universe of a universe of a universe. And every cell within the body is like a little universe within so many other universes. Yes? That's the way Krishna has created material nature. So the king has his kingdom, which is the world in this case, but his body is also a kingdom. And who are the citizens of the body? The king is the soul. And the citizens are the life air and the senses, the mind, the intelligence, the ego. These are all the citizens within this body. And at the time of death, all of these citizens have to evacuate the body along with the king. The serpent, who is like the life force, the life air, leaves with the king. He's being bound up by a higher power of Yavanaraj. And he's being dragged out of his body. He doesn't want to leave. It's my kingdom. Nobody can do this to me. But the power of time, everyone is defeated. Everyone is subjugated. There are no exceptions to the rule. Whoever you are, death must come. And at the time of death, the kingdom of this body is left with no citizens. The king is gone, his family is gone, all the citizens are gone, they're dragged away. And the body is just left to be plundered by time, plundered by material nature, until it simply becomes dust or ashes, or in some traditions, the excretions of birds like vultures. I remember long ago I was very sick on the bank of a river, Yamuna, and I was very close to death. And I saw a circle, I was all alone, there was nobody to help me. And I remember seeing right over my head, there was dozens of vultures just circling around my body. Vultures are very big-sized birds with big beaks that are designed to just tear your flesh apart. Haribo. They were just circling. Now I was thinking, how did they know I'm here? So many. I never see these vultures during the day. But somehow or other, when you're about to die, they just appear. Some networking. This is the technology of Krishna within the species of life. It's actually incredible. You just drop a little piece of a sweetmeat on the floor, and within a few minutes, there's millions of ants. Yes? Millions of ants just in perfect formation coming to get it and taking it. And how do they know it's there? I mean, devotees, even with our emails and everything else, even governments with all of their technologies, military technologies, computer technologies, within a matter of minutes to actually assemble millions and millions of people in one place to help, you know, move something. Yes? Just like if we want to move something in the temple, we have to make so many phone calls and emails, and maybe about 10 or 20 people, maybe 30 people, a couple hours later will come to help move it. But here we find millions and millions of ants, and where they're coming from. You don't even see them. All of a sudden, they're all there. And they're totally organized. Incredible management. You don't see one ant with a megaphone going, Prabhu, what are you doing? You're going the wrong way. You're supposed to go this way. Haven't you been trained properly? No, everyone knows their duty. Everyone's in perfect formation. They're doing wonderful. And they're dealing with ants, it appears. I haven't been an ant for a long time, but it appears that none of the ants have ever worked together before. How could millions of ants have worked together before? But yet they're in perfect harmony with each other. Millions. And they don't even trample each other. You don't see just ants dead from stampedes like there is when too many people come together at Kumbh Mela or something. No, they're perfect harmony. Such incredible networking they have. And how do they all get there? Just one ant. One ant must have seen that sweetmeat there. And he just sends... And he doesn't just... It's not like he's... I want it for myself. I'll hide it for my family. And I'll be happy for many, many days to come. No, immediately when they see something, they just send some signal that we can't even hear. We don't know what it is, but they send some signal to invite every other ant. Every other ant, come, this is for all of us. The community. Haribo. And they're all there helping one another. So that is the technology of the lower species, which is far superior than the technologies of human beings, although we're very proud. We have our very highly technological computerized air traffic control systems. But just look at the mosquitoes. Thousands of mosquitoes flying under one little light bulb, and they never crash. Did you ever see two mosquitoes go? They never crash. And they're flying like, how is that? Krishna has created a technology in them that's so spontaneous and so perfect. And they don't need runways. They could land and take off anywhere. They could land and take off from the tip of a needle. Haribo. Which is smaller than themselves. So yes, the technology of the lower species is very, very highly developed. And the technology within a human being, how the brain is operating and how it's sending signals to every part of the body and empowering various parts of the body with intelligence and abilities. And it's not the soul's intelligence that's doing these things. We don't know how it's happening. If you have a cut in your body, it's not that you meditate on sending blood there and sending various types of purifying agents within the body there to protect it and sending various ingredients so that the skin can heal. It's just all happening automatically. You may be sleeping when it's all happening. Yes? You're sound asleep. You don't even know. But your body's healing itself. And it's such an incredible infrastructure to heal even a cut. It's incredible. This is technology. This is God's technology. So to live in harmony with God's technology, that is actual knowledge, and that is for the real welfare of others. But when we create technologies that are conflicting or opposing the natural technologies of material nature, the universe, and God, that it may have some temporary pleasing effects, but in the end, disaster. So yes, laying on the bank of Jamuna, and all of a sudden, vultures are flying overhead. And they're not only flying, they're making very fearful shrieking noises. And I was unable to move. I had typhoid fever. I was just waiting for the vultures to come down and eat me. I was praying, let me remember you, my Lord. And then one little farmer came and put me on a rickshaw and brought me to a charitable hospital, Haribo. So death can come. And what happens at the time of death? All the citizens within this body are dragged away by a power higher than you. It's like sometimes we see in the world today, big, big people. They have so much power and so much money and so much control. Or they may be big gangsters or mafia people who everybody fears. Bodyguards all around. Big, big politicians. But then due to their karmas, they may be put in prison. And what happens when they're in prison? They're just like everyone else. Even an insignificant person who they wouldn't even look in the direction of just pushes you and you just, there's nothing you can do. You're breaking bricks, breaking rocks, and scrubbing toilets just like anybody else. Your freedom. You can't do what you want. You have to do what everyone else tells you to do. Very embarrassing situation for a big, powerful person to be put in prison and just be like everyone else in the lowest situation. But actually, that's what time is about. Srila Prabhupada explained during the Muslim-Hindu riots after the partition, There was just so many tens and thousands of bodies. The government couldn't distinguish, you know, who was what religion and who was another religion. They just put the bodies in piles and just burned them all. Actually, the time of death, whatever your body may be, even if you're put in a very, very nice tomb, still the insects are going to get in there and eat you up. And you're going to taste the same as anybody else to them. And they don't know you're a king. They don't know what your bank balance was. They don't know how many times you were on the front page of the newspapers. You taste the same as anybody. So yes, material nature has the power to just make everybody humble and equal at certain stage, as far as on the physical platform. So here is the mighty, powerful king who could conquer anybody in this world. But at the time of death, he's helpless. And this Yavanaraj ties him up. Ties him up and drags him right out of his kingdom. And along with him is dragged all of his loved ones and all of his citizens. And when nobody's left, the kingdom is left to be totally plundered by the enemy. And in this case, who is the enemy? The enemy of material nature. The enemy of time. And ultimately, Krishna says, time I am. To a materialistic person attached to the material conceptions of life, actually God is perceived to be like an enemy, because he's the controller of material nature, and ultimately his own energy is time, which is consuming us, and this Yavanaraj is his agent. But to a devotee, to one who has a pure heart, to one who has faith, to one who has spiritual realization, Surata Sarvadehinam, God is our best well-wishing friend. And therefore, even death, even when God comes in the form of time to take our soul away from this body, we see that our friend is coming. Death is not cruel to one who is in knowledge. The inevitable death is simply the beautiful gates to Vaikuntha opening for our life. Is that a horrible thing? Material world is Durga. It is a prison house. Now, there could be some nice situations in prison houses, but it is a prison house. We're shackled by the three modes of material nature: Rajaguna, Sattvaguna, Tamaguna. Time is controlling us, the mind and the senses are causing so much turmoil, birth after birth after birth. And it's very, and we're under the control, we're subjugated by these influences, and it causes much anxiety. Very difficult. Yes, the material world is considered by all the scriptures to be a prison. Now, when the leaders of the prison, they open up those big, and they open up the bars, and then they bring you into a beautiful, beautiful palace, which is your original home. Is that a horrible thing? That's what death is to a devotee. Death for a devotee who remembers Krishna at that time. Antakali chamameva smaran makva kalevaram. Krishna says, if you remember me at the time of death, you will attain me without fail. When Krishna says, without fail, he doesn't say that so often. But when Krishna says, without fail, he's not only speaking a truth, but he is super emphasizing the authority and the validity of that truth. He wants us to have complete confidence in his words. Krishna tells in Gita so many instructions, and they're all the absolute truth. But when there's a truth that he speaks, that is very, he really wants you to believe it from the core of your heart, especially, he will say, without fail. Harivo. Antakale chamame vasmanan bhaktva kalevra. If you remember me at the time of death, you will attain me without fail. Of this there is no doubt. He wants us to have complete faith in this principle. Man manabhava mad bhakto madhyajimnam namaskuru mam evaishyashi satyam te pratijani priyoshime. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me. I promise you this because you're my very dear friend. When Krishna gives that added, I promise, without fail, that means these particular verses are very, very critically essential to have complete faith in. So death to a devotee is actually wonderful. It may be physically painful, but essentially for the soul, it's freedom, it's liberation, it's going back home, it's getting out of the prison once and for all and going back to my eternal home. Back home, back to Godhead, to be with my eternal family of Radha, Krishna, the Gopas, the Gopis, and all the land of Sri Vrindavan Dham. And how to have that, how to attain that great benediction? By cultivating faith. By understanding from these pages of the Bhagavatam what it is like without such a devotional life, what death is about. We have seen another king who was the forefather of Prachini Barhishat, Dhruva Maharaj. When it was time for him to leave the world, it was just Vaikuntha airplane came down and said, Dhruva, come. It's time to go back to Vaikuntha. You're going to have your own pole star place, a Vaikuntha planet within this world. Come. And Dhruva Maharaj, so selfless, so grateful, he said, how can I go? Whatever spiritual realization I have is due to my mother. She's the one who turned me to Krishna. They said, we know your heart. Look. And he looked up. And his mother was already before him. She was on an airplane going back to Godhead. Is there any questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Maharaj, you were speaking about selflessly serving others and how in order to selflessly serve someone you actually have to feel love for them. But we also read many statements and we hear many statements oftentimes within devotee circles that Prabhupada said and that our acharyas teach that love is ultimately only for Krishna and that it's actually impossible to have love for anyone other than Krishna in this world. So if one is selflessly serving others, just as in these examples like Maharaj, Simeon, Sibi, and other examples, is it possible to actually manifest love for another living entity in this world?
Without love for Krishna, true love is not understood. You cannot give something you do not have. If you have love, you can give love. If you have love of God, then you have a great treasure house of love, and that love will naturally, spontaneously flow to every living being. If your love of God is hidden within your heart and you have no realization or connection to it, then you can't really love anyone. The love is on the mental platform. It's not really on the eternal spiritual platform. So the question is, how to attain that love? How to awaken that love? We are not defeatists, that I don't have love, so I can't show any love to anyone. I can't really serve anyone properly. I can't be selfless. So what is the use? Let me just go to sleep. Let me just be humble and just enjoy life like everyone else. Why should I pretend? Because I have no love, so why should I pretend to be loved? If I have no love, why should I do any selfless service for anyone? It's all just imitation. It's all hypocrisy. Look at these devotees. They're not pure paramhamsas, yet they're pretending to be pure devotees. They're selflessly serving others. I'm not going to fall for that. I will just enjoy and be honest and be real. Be myself. That is humility. Hare Krishna. If that is your consciousness, then you'll remain like that birth after birth after birth after birth after birth. Until you understand that the process of bhakti, the ends and the means are the same. When you actually love, selfless service is a spontaneous expression of your own heart. When you don't have that love, you do the same thing, selfless service, as a tapasya, for the purpose of expressing your desire for that love to Krishna. When Krishna sees you want it more than anything else, Krishna will give, he will awaken that love within your heart. But how do we show our desire? That is what bhakti is about, to express our desire to Krishna. We become purified through selfless service. And selfless service in a neophyte state may be an austerity. As we make spiritual advancement, it becomes more and more pleasing to the heart. And in the ultimate end, what is the goal? Pure, unalloyed selfless service for the rest of eternity. Thus, the ends and the means are the same. Prabhupada was asked, what do you hope to gain by chanting Hare Krishna? The goal of chanting Hare Krishna, Prabhupada said, is eternally to blissfully chant Hare Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna because we want to chant Hare Krishna forever. We worship the deities. The worship of the deity is an eternal service. It's not that we worship the deity because we think by doing this someday we'll go beyond the deities. No. We're cooking for the deities, but that offering of food, offering of clothing, offering of devotion through various forms is eternal. Actually, by Prabhupada's mercy, we're doing many of the same activities that the gopas and the gopis are doing in this spiritual world. They're singing for Krishna. They're dancing for Krishna. They're making flower garlands for Krishna. They're decorating temples and other areas for Krishna. They're cooking for Krishna. They're bathing Krishna. They're praying to Krishna. They're looking at Krishna. Krishna's looking at them. They're washing Krishna's plates. They're washing Krishna's pots. They're cutting Krishna's vegetables. They're hearing Krishna's glories. They're hearing Krishna's pastimes. They're speaking Krishna's pastime. This is what's going on internally in the spiritual world. And we're doing the same thing here. Yes? What's the difference between us and the residents of Vrindavan in Goloka? The essential, we're singing for Krishna, they're singing for Krishna. We're looking at Krishna and Radharani and they're looking at us. We're doing so many services. They're doing, the only difference is realization. We're doing it as Vaidhi Bhaktis. We're doing it out of rules and regulations. I have to chant the holy names. But Satatam Kirtayantomam, they're constantly chanting the holy names. You see, the gopis, they don't have to count their rounds because they're chanting 24 hours a day. If you were chanting 24 hours a day, you wouldn't need to count. Four rounds done. Eight rounds done. 15 rounds done. I'm almost finished. Almost finished. They don't have to do that. They're constantly chanting. Lord Chaitanya counted his rounds. The six Goswamis counted their rounds. Why? Rupan Sanatan, Raghunath Das Goswami, they're gopis of Vrindavan. Why are they counting rounds? Because in this world, they're doing it to teach us. We have to follow these rules and regulations if we actually want to purify ourselves so that spontaneously Kirtaniya Sadahari will always be chanting. So now we are following rules and regulations. We will make the offering on time because it is the order of the parampara. In deity worship, so many rules and regulations. You have to do the achmans, and you have to chant mantras, and you have to take baths, and you have to dress in a certain way, and everything else. Just so that we have a very, very serious consciousness that we're serving God. It's not whimsical. But by such service, by such chanting, by performing the activities of the spiritual world under rules and regulations, gradually we become so purified that we do the same thing out of love. So yes, selfless service is the goal in the spirit of tapasya. I mean, it's the means. Selfless service in a spirit of tapasya is the means of becoming purified. And in the end, selfless service as an expression of our spontaneous natural love is our eternal happiness. Does that answer your question? Actually? Thank you. Venkata Bhatta Prabhu is a lawyer, or what in India you call advocate, yes? And he has actually studied law specifically because he wants to use his skills to defend Krishna and his devotees. So everyone, please bless him that he can do nicely, because in America, devotees need those types of protectors. Is there one more question? Yes.
Hariwan Maharaj. Maharaj, when someone is doing selfless service for a long time and suddenly someone is serving an individual or a group or a community and all of a sudden someone criticizes him and says that, no, you have some selfish motivation, and he gets demotivated to do that service, or he discontinues that service. In such a situation, what should one do to continue selfless service?
One should be very happy because he's being tested or she's being tested. If your service is actually selfish, you will not be discouraged by that. You may feel unhappy that there's a difficulty in the reciprocation of love, but it will not disturb your enthusiasm. If it disturbs your enthusiasm, that means your service was to that extent selfish in the first place. Yes? Just like, if I squeeze my skin like this, does it hurt? I'm squeezing really hard, very hard, even harder, 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 but it doesn't really hurt. Actually, it feels nice. But if I had a boil there, yes? If I even touched it, it would hurt too much. Have you ever had a boil? How many of you in this room have had boils? Say, Hari Bol. Yes, very good. So, if you've had a boil, if you just, it hurts like anything. And if you touch it, it's too much. If you bump it against something, even gently, it's, ah! If somebody even looks at it, it hurts. If even someone's glance touches it. Why does it hurt? Because there's a disease there. Without a disease, you could slap it, you could touch it, and it's, no, it's all right. So when being criticized, when not being appreciated, when not being when being misunderstood, when that really hurts, that means that there's some selfishness there. It might hurt your heart because devotees are soft-hearted. When somebody who you're serving and you love criticizes you, it hurts. But it doesn't hurt your enthusiasm to serve. It's part of the process. Krishna puts these obstacles in our path to help us to understand what selfless service is really about. A mother has selfless service for a child. If the child says, Mother, I hate you, and really means it, at least at that moment, does the mother say, oh, forget it, get out of the house? Or you can stay in the house, but I'm not going to cook for you anymore. I'm not going to do anything for you. If you don't appreciate what I've done for you all these years, forget it, rascal. Does a mother do that? Sometimes they do. But that's not a loving mother. The mother says, the mother feels some pain in her heart. The child is saying he hates me. But the service remains the same. The enthusiasm to serve is the same because there's selfless devotion there on that level. Yes? So similarly, when these obstacles come, they actually are an opportunity for us to be a little introspective and understand, how much am I really doing this for Krishna? How much is my service actually selfless? This is the test. If my enthusiasm continues or even increases, then yes, I'm on the path of selfless service. But if my service attitude and my enthusiasm decreases, that means I'm just a very selfish person. And I have to overcome this selfishness by carrying on with my service with great enthusiasm and gain deep realizations from this situation and take shelter of the holy name. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.